Hello and welcome to day two of Mobile World Congress 2009 here on All About Symbian. I'm Ewan Spence, and joining me from Reading is...
Rafe Blanford. No, I kid. He's still on Barcelona, and we still haven't managed to patch in a line to him. This is Steve Litchfield.
Yeah, we have patched, of course. We have the live stream as a patch, so we can see what our erstwhile leader is getting up to there on the Catalonia coast down there at Mobile World Congress 2009. You also can do the same if you're listening. We have an archive at allaboutsymbian.com/live, which is updated as Rafe goes around, plus lots of pictures from the event on the show floor, in the press conferences, and so on. And we did get in touch with them briefly last night, and seemingly everybody is thoroughly enjoying our coverage. So, Steve, I think we can be proud.
I think so too. I think we're all doing a grand job, and we should pat ourselves on the back.
There we go. Right, so as we promised yesterday, we're going to talk about Omnia HD coming out of Samsung. We've also got the LG S60 device. There's some software movements with Skype on Symbian OS. Qualcomm and Nokia have done an interesting press release, but to open that all up, to the surprise of absolutely everybody in the mobile industry, Nokia announced an 8-megapixel camera phone. Steve,
they did indeed.
We spent all day trying to find out about this because we didn't know about it before, did we?
Oh, no. In fact, it was rather an inadvertent own goal, which I should explain, because some people have been saying on the site, what are you talking about, an inadvertent own goal? What happened was, yesterday on the Monday, Nokia released a press kit for the Monday devices, and someone absent-mindedly included a PDF file talking about their involvement with Carl Zeiss, the optics people, which showed photos of the N86. And this press kit, this PDF, shouldn't have been put in that press kit. It should have been put in the Tuesday press kit. But for a short while, it was in the wrong press kit. So everyone found out about the photographs of their new 8-megapixel device. But no worries, because 15 or so hours later, it's now fully official. Rafe was at the launch, and we've got all sorts of notes up on the site, including a full story. But just to summarise, it can be thought of as a successor to both the N82 and also the N85. If you imagine most of the best bits of the N82 plus all of the features of the N85 in an N85 lookalike, available in black and white, as far as we know so far. It's got a dual LED flash. It's claimed to be third generation, which I guess means it might be brighter than the second generation, which were brighter than the first generation. But we have to test it. I doubt if it'll be anywhere near as bright as the N82's xenon flash. But that aside, I think it's all positives. They've got what they claim are optimized optics, including a variable aperture, which basically means that most camera phones have a fixed aperture and pretty rubbish optics and pretty small sensor. This has got a large aperture, which can get bigger, which means it can let more light in for low light shots. It's got this brighter flash, in theory. And it's got 8 gigabytes of internal flash memory as well for saving stuff onto, plus micro SD card. The OLED screen that you love so much from the N85 is still here. It's still 2.6 inches, which is a bit of a disappointment. We'd expected something that was VGA and larger. But there are metallic highlights, as they call them, round. So we're expecting a more solid build quality. The front is all glass, apparently, rather than plastic, which should help as well. What are your thoughts, Ewan? You've had the N85 for quite a while now. How does this look to you in comparison to that?
Obviously, the styling is carried over from the N85 with the top smooth surface. And it's very much a phone that will not scare people. And I think that's an important thing. What I did find interesting was when you actually look at the zoomed in close-up shots of the MP3 keys, so forward, backward, play and swap, they also have the two magnifying keys there as well. And I'm wondering if they're either for the camera or for the web browser. So there's certainly been some changes put on there. It might even be that is for the lens, and you've got manual control over that lens. I really don't know. The thing is, again, it looks to be a Nokia phone that's missing one or two important things, and people are going to zoom in on the fact that it is missing the Xenon flash, and that there's no increase in the screen resolution. It's still that 320x240. But again, it's an 80 number, so that kind of means it's mid-range, doesn't it? You know, in Nokia's numbering, who knows? It's 8 megapixel, but as Steve, as you've rightly pointed out on the site in great depth, which, to be honest, looks like a Royal Institute Christmas lecture, it's not all about megapixels. Yes, that's nice, and yes, there is an almost arms race, but it's what happens underneath it as well.
Nokia seem very, very proud, according to Rafe, of the optimizations they've done under the hood here in terms of the hardware, working with Carl Zeiss to produce something that can be as good as a camera phone can possibly be. Now, obviously, the proof is in the pudding, but here's a quote from the press release. The lens has been engineered to offer sharper image contrast and better color representation. So with the variable aperture, it's got a mechanical shutter rather than electronic. It's got this variable aperture and the enhanced LED flash. I think the signs are good. This obviously won't replace the N82 for extremes of darkness, say in a nightclub. But for all other conditions, including taking perhaps evening sunset shots, which is something which the existing Nokia camera phones are pretty bad at, because the flash wasn't good enough to illuminate anything over about 3 or 4 meters away. And yet the sensors weren't big enough to produce noise-free shots. Here we've got a larger aperture lens, which may well produce better low-light shots. Nokia did release as one of their teaser images for the N86 8MP a low-light shot taken at night in Barcelona. And if that's representative of what the N86 8MP can do, then I think we're in for a pretty good phone.
It is interesting, though, that some of the stats are showing it's only having about 13 hours standby time, though.
That's a typo. I took that out of the news story. I'm sure that's a typo at Nokia's end, which I pasted in and I've since removed because it's wrong.
Well, excuse me. Given that they had the E55 yesterday rack up, 28 days on standby? Obviously, the N-series devices have a lot more electronics in them. Powering up a CCD for an 8 megapixel, and even with the 2 LED, it's going to require a huge amount of power, even though it may well be offset by the AMOLED screen. It's nice. It's not stunning, though. It's not leaving me with that wow feeling. It's leaving me with that that's quite nice feeling, which is good. But obviously, to be honest, I think I'm more excited about the 6210 and the 6220s that came out yesterday.
Yeah. The one I'm looking forward to trying away from the N86, of course, is the Samsung Omni HD. Do you mind if we go to that next on a bit more? Yeah, the Omnia HD was announced yesterday lunchtime. I think if there is a candidate for phone of the show for Mobile World Congress 2009, then this is probably it. Also known as the i8910, it's essentially the same megapixel rating as the Nokia N86, but this has got full 720p HD video recording. Now, I'm not entirely sure what the 720p stands for. I know this is part of the nomenclature of high def video, but presumably we're talking higher resolution than the normal DVD resolution. And it's going to be pretty smooth, I think. The battery life has been quoted as being 40 minutes of capture, but I think 40 minutes of capturing HD of video on a phone is actually not too bad. And of course, using normal usage, which you might be taking videos of your kids or short events, there's no way you're going to rack up 40 minutes continuous video capture. So as long as the battery holds up, I think this is going to be stunning. It's got a 3.7-inch OLED display, which according to all accounts is absolutely stunning. It's bigger and brighter and more saturated than any other phone at the show. There's all sorts of comparison photos being put up. It's got the usual S60 connectivity specs, including Wi-Fi, of course. Yeah, UPnP, DLNA, is that the same as UPnP? Rafe would know. Where is Rafe when you need him? It's also got a load of sensors, proximity sensor, light, compass, accelerometer. The battery is 1500 milliamp hours, which is the same as on the E90. The display is 360 by 640 pixels, which is the same resolution as on the Nokia 5800. So I'm gathering that's just the standard resolution these days for S60 5th edition. Finally, it comes in 8GB and 16GB versions. So
and that's internal, not through an SD card.
Absolutely, plus micro SD. I don't know why they keep bothering with these dual capacities, though. Is there really that much difference in terms of build price? Why don't they just simplify all their marketing and sales literature and just have one product. Well, it comes in.
When someone goes into a shop, they see the phone they want, and then they go, I'll get the cheaper version. So it kind of gives them the customer that false comfort. So from a technical point of view, no, there isn't. But I think from a emotional and point of sale point of view, it's vital to have two different sizes because it makes people feel good about their purchase.
Yeah. It's also got what they call an intuitive 3D interface, which I'm assuming it's just the little Samsung's home screen rewrite on top of S65th edition. None of us on the AS team really like these custom home screens, but Samsung do seem absolutely determined to put their Touch Whiz system on every single phone they produce. But there we go.
Innovative 3D interfaces have we seen down the years? Not just from Samsung, but I can remember seeing them way back, on the 7650, for crying out loud. It's like, oh, we've got innovative 3D and none of them have taken hold.
If you include all the Windows Mobile world and the non-Symbian, well, then we're talking hundreds, and it's all rather moot. At the end of the day, if you can just simplify the underlying user interface, then it doesn't really matter what your home screen looks like. I'm in favour of having a single home screen, which also acts as your program launch, which is why I think the iPhone's interface, certainly the way into programs, is potentially one of the best out there. Also, the new Windows Mobile 6.5 launcher looks to be including both the functionality of a home screen and a program launcher all in the one screen, which looks a good idea to me.
So there we go. Staying over in America, not necessarily though with Windows Mobile, Qualcomm, who drive most of the UTMS devices and chipsets over there, have had an interesting press release from Nokia. With Nokia. Now, previously, you may remember, Qualcomm and Nokia were not the best of friends over patents and 3G licensing and technology and IP rights and so on. This was settled up late last October with Qualcomm stopping off all their court cases and Nokia licensing out parts of the patented technology from Qualcomm. They announced today that they were going to be working together on phones for the North American market. And I think this is quite nice. I mean, it seems to be on the face of it quite a sort of regular press release, the sort of thing that you need to release for the stock market, say these two companies are working together, we've got a phone out some point next year. But we've always discussed that how can Nokia get into the US market? And I think having the Qualcomm and the UMTS will actually give them a little bit more confidence when they approach the American operators like Sprint and Verizon, assuming that they're the two that have UMTS. I think that's actually quite an important move, even though it's kind of been shunted off down the pages in front of all the shiny toys.
Yeah, there's a certain sum of money that was changed hands, was it last
about
autumn?
2.9 billion, I think, yeah. What's 0.1 of a billion between friends in the current climate?
You have to wonder how much of this was actually Nokia and Qualcomm actually shaking hands and agreeing to be friends, and how much was, hey, you've paid us the money, now we can now be friends, and being rather forced. But
I thought it'd be nice and optimistic for once.
Yeah, let's assume that everything's amicable and we can go forward and leave the past behind.
Indeed, yes. What else did we have coming out of there? We've had the Omni HD, other agreements. Skype is making inroads as well. There's a fair amount of them going on a lot of devices, not just S60, although naturally we're going to focus on their S60 and Symbian Foundation participation here. It looks like the N97 is going to have Skype built in.
Yes, probably not on the first N97s. We're expecting the N97, as you know, in sort of late May, June timescales. With the Skype integration is due to happen sometime in the early autumn. So I'm guessing that the N97s, like every other Nokia S60 smartphone, will have a fairly active firmware upgrade program, and that the Skype will be rolled into that at some point so everyone can take part. The integration is right deep down into contacts. So if you can imagine seeing the contacts on Ovi or Nokia Chat as it was before that in action on the current S60 devices, whereby the online status can be put on a tab beside each contact's name within contacts. I think this will be look very much like that, but obviously done deep down in the OS rather than being an add-on that users have to install. As to whether this will appear on other devices that already exist, I'm guessing that the newer ones running S60 third edition feature packed to stand a chance, but I also think there's a chance this may stay S60 fifth edition only, which means the 5800 should, for example, get the update.
it interests me that you're going back to that sort of, we're going to push everything into the address book again, because this is was exactly one of the pitches that Palm made with Palm with WebOS and the Palm Pre, the fact that your address book would have layers and layers from all your social networks coming through. So by taking the Nokia address book and the OV contacts address book there, and now putting a Skype layer in there as well, it's starting to look like that the address book program built into a device could well be the battleground for the sort of H2 2009 H1 2010.
Yeah, you have to bear in mind that Skype, although it's a very well-known name, Skype isn't that ubiquitous. If you look at the number of subscribers on Skype, I'd be willing to bet it's quite a bit lower than that on, for example, MSN or other instant messaging systems. So it's great to have this integration with Skype, but just like Google Latitude we discussed before on this podcast, and just like other systems out there, nothing is so large that it is a surefire bet for making its way into the mass market. But yeah, this is a good start, and let's hope it takes off as well.
And certainly Skype is used by more people higher up the technology adoption curve.
Yes, I think. Well, that also applies to things like contacts on Ovi and Google Latitude. All these things are geeks and geek hangers-on and geeks family items. It's when they hit the mass market, when they hit the high street, that something really takes off. And I don't think any of these things really have the inertia and the size to take off at this time.
And speaking of hitting the high street markets, LG have had a number of Symbian-powered smartphones, but have never really got to a really big high street. They've always been on limited sales. The device has been quite hard to find, run very small runs. They've announced another Symbian-powered device at MWC here as well, the LG KT770, to which somebody commented, Rafe, it's a nice shade of blue, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't actually seen the KT770. Every time I read an LG press release, I'm just so appalled by the terrible English. I just think their heart isn't in this. They can go to an international show and put out a 400-word press release in broken English. For the sake of £20, hire a translator, hire someone who can speak the language, because it's just appalling. But you go, yeah, go on. You can talk about the blue.
Blue, da-da. That is a Cowboy Bebop reference there now for anyone. Yes, the KT770, of which I can't even find it on LG's press site for MWC. They're quite happily shouting there, we've built a phone that's transparent, and they're going to be one of the first partners to ship a Windows Mobile 6.5 device with the new interface we talked about earlier in the show. Yet the KT770 seems to be just pushed away into the corner. Rafe's already down there having a look. It's... we can't even work out actually if it's 3rd edition or 5th edition yet, to be honest. It's got a 400x240 screen, which makes you think that there's some sort of touch area or component on it. It's running off micro SD. It's going to be available both in GSM and 2 UMTS versions. It has a 9-way joystick for easier internet browsing. I'd love to know if that's 9-way in hardware or software, because the last Symbian device to have a 9-way stick that I can recall, is an 8-way stick on the original N-Gage, and that provides you an extra contact for diagonal up and left and up and right and so on, which gives you a little bit more accuracy rather than doing it in software. It's something that the gamers would really love to see on the more mainstream devices. I mean, it's the LG, it's a regular looking phone. It's a slider vertically. It's got regular buttons on it. It's got your call hang up. It looks like it doesn't look stunning or anything. It looks like the sort of thing that you would just have in the shop as it's another phone, if that's the sort of thing that you think will match to your handbag. But you know, for all of LG's prominence in consumer electronics, they've never really got behind Symbian. It's almost like we're just the check bet at a game of poker until something better comes along.
Look at that, I'm getting personal now, aren't they?
It's like, we're the check bet, yeah.
Yeah, they do seem a bit half-hearted. Every year at the Symbian smartphone show, they produce something, and we all go, ooh, it's a new manufacturer coming on the scene. But then they sell a couple of hundred in Italy, and they seem happy with that. Whereas the likes of Nokia and Samsung are going all out for world domination, and LG just putter along, to be honest. And this doesn't look like a handset that's going to break them out into the big league.
No, unfortunately. And I don't think they want to break out in the big league with Symbian in any case. And there's been no sign of that beforehand.
Oh, well, I've got a picture up. It is blue, isn't it? Maybe it's just the lights.
There we go. So, I mean, those are the major sort of Symbian ones. I don't think we're expecting anything else major in terms of hardware. But as we see, there's probably going to be more software announcements coming on throughout the day. And, you know, having a look around, Steve, and the reaction that MWC's had online, quite a lot of people have picked up on the App Store again. If we just return to the Nokia OV App Store, it seems to have... I thought people were going to be quite cynical about it, but to be honest, most people went, well, that's quite nice.
I was quite surprised by all the positive feedback that Nokia got generally from their Monday morning conference, because the two business devices were nice and solid, but they weren't that exciting. The in the obvious store, we're talking of 3 or 4 months away before it's up and running and available to the public. But I think that I hope people have caught the same sort of air of optimism that I've caught up, that it's not just an iPhone App Store clone, that Nokia have put a lot of thought into making it intelligent. And I think that's going to be the difference. From a developer point of view, there's probably similar margins and similar amounts of money to be made. But from the consumer point of view, I think I reckon this is the second generation of App Store. And it'll be interesting to see what Microsoft do with their marketplace. And also BlackBerry have got a new on-device store coming as well. And I'm very much hoping that Apple also, with their June-July refresh, produce a second version of the iPhone App Store. And then by the end of 2009, we'll have a whole range of on-device ways of grabbing software and services and games in a way that's not just flat and boring, but in a way in which it can be relevant to you and can suggest the right things to you at the right time in the right places. I think these genres, these services have got a long way to go.
Yeah, it's almost like what we're seeing now is we're seeing an electronic warehouse which you have to wander around. And what we're hoping for is a little corner shop with some old wizened man who knows absolutely everything in the shop. And he'll just go to you like, what do you like? What are you looking for? Wait a minute. And he'll just scurry off away for a minute or two and come back with a dusty box and go, here, this is Quick Office. Yeah. I'm not saying Quick Office should actually be an open all hours with outcry. It's just a more personalization thing.
If you think of download, that's currently on Nokia 60 phones, is kind of the corner shop where it's just running a bit low on stock and that's all you got. And it's all a bit disappointing. And you go away, the staff are very friendly, but they haven't actually got very much. And then you think, as you say, that the Apple iPhone App Store is this huge warehouse that you have to wander around and grab everything yourself. And you never stand a chance of finding everything that might apply to you. What the new second generation stores are like a corner shop that are friendly, but out the back, in the basement or the backyard, they've got the full warehouse and they know where stuff is. So I think it's the best of both worlds, really, hopefully.
There we go. And speaking of that sense of fun and knowledge, I just want to close off. Symbian Foundation, I mean, they rebranded, they kind of launched their branding in this huge sort of jokey, cartoony style. And we'll hear from Rafe what it looks like actually on the ground. But I have to say, I'm really impressed with the fact that they've done something different with all these robot duck stomping cartoons and urban spacemen floating around. And I'm just wondering if they've got the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band music playing on quietly in Hall 8 at their stand. Because I just love the cheekiness that they seem to have.
I think, did you remember the fuss a few years ago when Microsoft launched its Comic Sans? I think the Comic Sans font, the one that... my wife's a teacher and she loves to use it in the classroom because it's a really friendly open font. And yet I know lots of friends who absolutely hate the Comic Sans font, absolutely hate it. So I suspect it'll be the same with the Symbian Foundation branding. People will either love it or hate it. I'm not sure yet. The jury's still out, but I'm glad you like it.
I'm like it. And I just love the fact that they're feeding Rafe's fruit smoothies and coffee whenever he goes past the stand. Good for you, chaps. That's
very good. Yes. Keeping our industrious leader going.
Right then, I think that's the highlights for day two.
Yes, we can. I'm sure we can find something to chat about on day three.
Indeed, yeah, because we want to come away. Like all good journalists, we'll need to find the one overall theme and try and describe MWC and what it means for mobile phones in 2009 and going forward in the 21st century. And we'll need to be able to sum that all up in one easy-to-digest soundbite. So we're going to work on that while looking through all the press releases. You out there listening, hopefully you can join in with the debate and the comments over allaboutsymbian.com. We've got a bucket loads of MWC coverage as well. But of course, we have coverage going on throughout the year. If this is the first time listening to the podcast, welcome. Normally, we have Rafe here as well, and he's the one who knows everything and doesn't get anything wrong. But in the meantime, it is a goodbye from myself, Ewan Spence.
And a goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
And we will see you tomorrow for part 3 of our MWC coverage. For now, stay safe. Ta-ra.